and welcome to SG Voice Talks 2, brought to you by Sustainable Growth Voice, part of DC Thompson. In our fortnightly episodes of Sustainable Growth Out Loud, the SG Voice editorial team get together to discuss the biggest sustainability stories of the last couple of weeks and why they matter to business. What we do at SG Voice Talks 2 is talk to the people who are actually contributing to change, to the sustainable transition and the disruption of the status quo. I'm Felicia Jackson, the editor of SG Voice, and this week I'm joined by Chris Hocknell, director and owner of sustainability consultancy 8versa. Thank you so much for being with us today, Chris.
Pleasure to be with you.
So today also marks the launch of a white paper written by you and your team, focusing on an overlooked issue with the Science-Based Targets Initiative methodology. So this focus on absolute versus intensity emissions targets. Can you explain to me what it's all about?
Around last year, or maybe rather 2021, when it first started, SBTI released its definition of net zero, which was well needed. There was a lack of definition as to what net zero really meant. So they did quite a lot of work and came up with a new paper, a new standard. And what's happened since then, it has been taken up by a variety of large organisations around the world, at least a few thousand, and there's actually many more thousands that are claiming to align with it and have said, this is what we're doing. And it has kind of become the de facto definition of how we should reach net zero. But the problem is that it has some inbuilt methodological issues and challenges. And ultimately, the definition of SBTI really favours a certain sector of business and can be incredibly difficult and almost impossible to achieve for certain other types of businesses, primarily small and medium-sized businesses and anyone in the more kind of innovative technology space where they're rapidly growing and expanding. It's very, very difficult to meet the definition of net zero as defined by SBTI.
Can you just explain to me what this difference is? So we've got absolute emissions targets, we've got intensity emissions targets. What's the difference and why does it matter?
SBTI very clearly favours what's called absolute contraction. And the fundamental principle is that you set a carbon budget. Now that can be what we emitted in 2020 is what's called our baseline. And then we cap it that, say it's 100 tonnes. 100 tonnes is now our budget and our company should not exceed that. And we should make annual reductions of say 4.5%, whatever that might be, for the next 30 years until we reach net zero. So on paper, it sounds great and that should work. But the problem is that reality isn't like that and carbon budgets are very constraining. Now, if you're a very big company that's kind of cornered the market, and we can probably think of a few in our minds that maybe have 30, 40% of market share, they are the go-to brand. They really operate and control that market. They have a very entrenched and kind of privileged position, and maybe they do have the autonomy and the resources and the control to potentially contract their emissions year on year like clockwork. However, if you're a small company, a challenger brand, a company that's aiming to take market share, and you may have a better product, a more sustainable product, you cannot simultaneously grow by 20% while contracting your emissions on an absolute basis. So that's where the alternative approach of what's called intensity metrics, which is basically that could be 1 kilogram of carbon per unit of economic activity or output. It could be, for example, for every t-shirt, it's 1 kilogram of carbon and we measure ourselves like that. So that would be a preferable way to measure your carbon reductions for an SME or a growing company, because obviously as they scale, they should get more efficient and their carbon per unit of output should get better. And we would want to achieve the reductions. The key thing here is we still want the reductions, that's essential, but we're measuring it differently. And rather than just putting a kind of an arbitrary budget and that no one can exceed, we kind of move with the company and allow them to grow and scale while reducing on a per unit basis.
So that sounds like it's an incredible challenge when it comes to companies that are trying to completely disrupt a high carbon sector.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think this is where the reality versus the kind of paper-based or rather digital-based kind of calculations, which are very abstract, come into conflict, because, you know, if it mathematically it's an arithmetic. When you're looking at the arithmetic, if everyone just limits and trends down and we put a cap on everyone, we just go down, then great, job done. But I mean, we in the white paper, we use quite a few examples of a lot of the big organizations or companies in various different, say, technology is a particular one because we've had a lot of technology activity over the last 15, 20 years. But even companies in, say, fashion and other areas of various sectors within the economy, there's a lot of companies that didn't even exist 20 years ago. So, you know, 15, 20 years ago, they were kind of an 8-person startup somewhere, and now they're maybe a multi-billion pound company or dollar company, and their rise has been, you know, really, really kind of aggressive, and they have really great products. Netflix, for example, could be an example of someone who's just completely flipped the market. Blockbuster Video, kind of along a forgotten entity, and now it's Netflix. And they're not necessarily, I wouldn't call Netflix a sustainable brand, but that's an example of where completely flipped the kind of status quo. And that is happening in lots of industries and technology, and particularly if we're looking at, you know, as if we zoom out and look at a net zero, low carbon, high renewables, new technology future, we need innovation and new solutions everywhere we can think of. We need better ways of doing things. So we're so in desperate need of groundbreaking, innovative, amazing technologies to kind of come into the sector and flip over the incumbents, which may be very carbon intense and not actually maybe part of the end point. There's a company called Oxford PV that I'm make this example quite well. Now they've come up with basically a new it's a type of, you can think of it as a type of technology for solar PV that makes it more efficient, really, when you kind of harvest sunlight to make power, and it's probably about 40-50% more efficient. And so in terms of sustainability, this is like a dream. You know, we can reduce the amount of solar panels that we needed, which means less material, it's more efficient, it makes the economics work, so we can now put them in kind of slightly less favorable climates, things like that. So from a sustainability perspective, we can all be jumping for joy at this great leap forward. However, they're really not a very big company, and they're about to go into a huge amount of kind of scale up and production. And ideally, we want them to replace the old relatively inefficient panels and help us save, you know, millions of tons of carbon around the world. And a company like them could not even dream of being aligned with a carbon budget. But yes, we want them to desperately succeed. So we really need to measure them on an intensity basis, which could be amount of solar output sold, or it could be monetary, you know, pounds, euros, and kilograms of carbon per every financial value of sale. And that's the best way to measure a company like that.
So one of the things that we need to clear up, a lot of activists are calling for absolute emissions. And we do know that we have we've got a huge amount of work to do in a very short space of time. So what's wrong with carbon budgets and carbon limits?
Carbon budgets are great if you can do it. So if you can, fantastic, all the better, great luck to you. The challenge we have is that many companies can't work with a carbon budget, and that is the main problem. It's preferable, but the reality is that it's not relevant to everyone. So some of the key challenges that prevent people from participating in carbon budgets are that it can be very restrictive. It's maybe a bit more short term. There are certainly instances where SMEs might need to increase their carbon in the next year or two to maybe invest in some long term low carbon technology, or to scale up, which might make them more efficient in the future. But we need to inject, you know, a higher footprint in the short term to get a long term goal. And that's not unusual for SMEs. We see that quite a lot. Also, I think it adds certain disincentives again for innovation and that kind of thing. And one problem, I think, is we get a lot of what's called carbon leakage, where we tend to just, when we say a budget, we basically give it to one entity and we stick to them like mad, and we're tracking you. But in reality, you know, supply chains, they're a bit like ecosystems. They flow all over the place, and we have lots of indirect emissions and things like that. So,
That offshoring emissions
business. That is a big problem, and it's very, very hard when you work with these companies, and particularly ones with large supply chains. It's, you know, you can have several tiers and layers before you get to where this product or thing is coming from, and at some point you lose the thread, and that's a real challenge. And if we're just looking at that entity and drawing a box around them and we measure that entity, we have things that are outside of that entity's boundary. And that is the bit we, you know, what we actually want to do is go and kind of get closer to that entity via another route, via another company, or get to another point within that supply chain where we have visibility and get them to participate. So that's the need, that's why we need more people to participating, so we get that better coverage of all of our indirect emissions.
And that's why the SMEs are so important, because they're all part of somebody's supply chain.
Absolutely. And there's something people forget. They say that's a big company, they draw a box around it. But if you look at any company, some of the companies we work with, they may have 1,000 SMEs on their supply chain kind of system. And what they don't realize is we have a brand and we have a face of a company, but it's actually comprised and aggregated of thousands of SMEs. If we don't have them playing the game, we've got no chance.
What's confusing to me, though, is the fact that the SBTi seems to allow for intensity targets, but only for what it describes as corporates, which is companies, am I right in saying, over 500 people?
Yes. Yeah, so SBTi has defined organisations into one of two categories. It's either a corporate, which is 500 or greater employees, or you class as an SME if you're less than 500 employees. And there was a plan for them to do some dedicated guidance for SMEs. And from our experience as a sustainability advisory company, we spend probably most of our time with SMEs. And you know, some of those SMEs aren't that small. They could be 300-400 people and have turnover in the tens of millions. So they're not small companies, but so they have resources, and they you'll see them in shops that we would go in the day-to-day lives. So they're relatively big players in some respects, and they have this, in theory, that if they were to go to SBTi, they have this limit that they just cannot, and by that definition, they cannot be sustainable or net zero. And I don't quite know why. My assumption is that SBTi is ultimately very tailored to the big business kind of corporate world, and I think that is their focus. And you know, maybe there's nothing wrong with coming up with a standard which is really aimed at those kind of big, maybe 1,000 biggest companies in the world, and maybe that's their mark, that's their place, that's where they need to be. The problem is that this definition has been now accepted as the definition, when in reality I think we need to recognise that it works for big players and not the small ones. And I just think SBTi kind of, they've got their eye on the big corporates, that's what they're thinking. And when it came to thinking about dedicated requirements for SMEs, they've kind of, I don't know if they just said, well, that's really not our concern, so we've just stuck with what our old approach was, which was carbon budgets for everyone, and they haven't really invested the time in that. I don't know, it could be that there's a bit of a myopia on the people who have designed it, and they don't necessarily see the challenges that small companies have, and just the disparity in resources, and also maybe they're not looking out long term as to what happens to small companies and looking at trajectory of businesses and how they perform over the years. It's a strange one.
Yeah, it does seem to me that, given that we know that SMEs make up, what is it, 90% of all economic activity, and they certainly employ more people than anybody else. I know there was some research done a couple of years ago that showed that, I think it was 100 companies were responsible for the majority of emissions over the last sort of 100 years or something. But how are we going to actually achieve net zero if we don't have a solution that works for SMEs and innovative companies?
Yeah, absolutely. And I suspect that it might be the rationale from SBTi. They may be thinking, because I knew exactly that stat as well, and then maybe they're thinking, look, if we collar the top few hundred or few thousand, then you know, it's the 80-20 rule, I suppose, perhaps in their mind. And but the reality is, yeah, it's actually by headcount, SMEs are around 90 odd, and sometimes it can be 99%. If you take the definition that they've got of under 500 people, 99% of companies in the world by number have fewer than 500 employees, and it's about 50% of economic activity. So we have a definition that excludes 99% of people and 50% of economic activity. So it's a bit out there. But yeah, and I think we're also neglecting a bit of a kind of behaviour change and engagement piece here, because if we're only speaking to 1% of companies, they may be very influential. Then, you know, I think a lot of what we do in sustainability is trying to take people with us on the journey and trying to get people on board and realise and get them to build their literacy and knowledge of the discipline and how we can all make better choices, and we all can. And if we're just kind of putting these people aside and saying, oh, we know we don't need to work with you because we're looking at the big fish, then I don't know how that helps engagement. I actually think it's a bit antithetical to engagement and participation in many respects.
All you're really saying is we need an approach to decarbonisation that's more realistic and more nuanced, and one that brings everyone along together on a journey. So it's not letting people, or even not even letting, but not pushing people away from being able to say, I'm aligned with net zero and I can prove it.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think the more companies do that, the more we get that kind of, you know, that positive feedback loops. And we actually saw it with the SBTI, you know, once a couple of big players in the sector committed, the rest panicked and did the same. But the challenge we've got is they've committed to a standard which doesn't work for everyone. So I think we'd like to go through that process again, but with a more forgiving and enabling definition for the smaller companies.
I love that. So what we're saying is what we have is good. We just need to make it better and we need to bring everyone along.
Yes, I think so. I mean, I think I don't know if this is going to happen or not, but we might need a kind of a few different kind of routes or definitions as to what we certainly need a route which is more SME focused, and from our and my perspective, that is looking at an intensity metric kind of measurement basis for these growing small companies that hopefully will be the bigger, more sustainable companies of tomorrow. And I think that's so, you know, it might be that we end up with a bit of a two definition approach, but actually I think if we're looking at something like intensity metrics, I actually think it's relevant for everyone, because if you do the arithmetic, what we don't want is two players in a sector doing absolute contraction, and then the other ones who can't participate just not, and they're just off doing their own thing and they can't to participate in this definition. Whereas if you look at the arithmetic, if you know 9 out of 10 players within a sector all agree to work on intensity metrics and trend down over the long term, then we get that, you know, I think we get that kind of result across the sector. And I think we need to stop looking at tiny little individuals and kind of look at the sector as a whole, and we want to be setting sectorial carbon emissions, be that amount of carbon per fridge, amount of carbon per trainer. We want everyone who produces those products work on that same journey and kind of measured on the same basis. And I think that's the way to get change.
Excellent. Well, listen, thank you so much for joining us today. And I really hope this is the beginning of a much broader and wider conversation. To our listeners, if you'd like to share your thoughts about what's been discussed today, you can find us on social media or drop us an email at sgvoice@dcthompson.co.uk. Don't forget to tune in to SG Voice Out Loud, our podcast episode where the SG Voice team will discuss the most important stories in sustainability. Or join us next time on SG Voice Talks 2. And don't forget, you can subscribe wherever you find your podcasts. Thanks again.